from MLU headquarters in Philadelphia.
You should go underneath it.
Oh, way out deep!
This is Cleats and Cuffs.
Hit man! Oh, what a one! Murray!
Everything ultimate, from the field to the boardroom.
Hey, you got this?
There?
Oh, yes!
Hello,
Mr. Graham!
And welcome to Cleats and Cufflinks. Back next to me, Dusty Rhodes. As I'm going to start to say, as always, Dusty Rhodes, or as nearly always,
as frequently.
Dusty Rhodes.
I'm happy to be back. It's a comfortable seat to sit in. It's got good support.
We're getting used to it.
Yeah.
People don't know this, but you actually provide yourself additional support with some of the foam that's around the office. Dusty likes to be a little bit more forward,
well,
a little lumbar.
The seat on these chairs is a little bigger than the part of me that sits down is.
It's a deep seat. Not,
versatile.
Versatile. It fits a lot of different body types.
Yeah.
That's what we like to say. Glad to have you back. We actually skipped last week because you weren't here. I've just decided that's what I'm going to do now. it's a means of pressuring you to come up to Philadelphia, I guess.
Well, that's fine for me. I've been moving over the last week or so, so I'm a little discombobulated, a little out of sorts. Don't know where all my clothes are. Don't know where my belongings are. They're in boxes. So I'm just that's fine. I would not have been able to do it even if I had been able to make it up here.
I've seen you, during your move, have come upon some interesting paraphernalia strewn around, some old Frisbee insights. In the mix, I think.
So many things. I have notes from games in 2003, back when I first started with Pike. I have like notes on players who no longer play anymore. I have some notes on players who still play, like secrets about how I thought I was going to be able to play against them. I found footage of you playing. I found footage
That's
of
terrifying.
Me playing. I don't think you did anything bad in that game, but
all right.
It was limited.
Typically, I didn't do anything bad. Sometimes I was not noticed.
We were right.
But that season, 2004, I had no turnovers.
It was...
So.
And the fact that there's this video and all of this that I'm just coming back across is kind of like, that's the exciting thing for me, is I get to go back through them and sort of compare what I knew then to what I know now, and the players that I was thinking about and the styles that I was thinking about and all these different things. It's been enlightening, but I haven't had the time that I would like to go back over all of it, because I just have to put it in a box, carry it down the stairs, drive it across town, and come back for more.
Yeah, that will affect your ability to parse the data. I think it would be interesting, though. Maybe we'll do a little like Dusty's Dusty Remnants segment.
Dusty Reminisces, Dusty Rhodesiness. There's something in there.
Yeah, we'll find it. We'll find it.
There's a terrible pun we're looking for.
We'll find it. But for now, we're gonna start our show with what I hope will be a somewhat regular segment called the Don't Panic segment. Both of us being, I would say, enormous nerds. are huge fans of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy.
One of the best.
Douglas Adams, rest in peace.
Five-part trilogy.
Fantastic. Every version of which is very different from itself. The radio show, the old text-based computer game. Not sure you ever played that.
I'm aware of it.
Yeah, it's impossible.
Text-based computer games are, because there are these commands that you don't know exist that you have to learn about it anyway.
Yeah,
we're getting
off topic, but we're gonna use it as a jumping off point. So basically, in the book, if you've never read the book, you're listening to the wrong podcast. but if you've never read the book, get out and read it. But there's a game in the book called Brockian Ultra Cricket. Douglas Adams clearly had some opinions on cricket.
Not all of which were positive.
Not all of which were positive. And Brockian Ultra Cricket, though some of which were positive.
Oh, certainly. He was British.
Yeah. It comes with the tea.
It's the Commonwealth.
The Brockian Ultra Cricket has a series of rules, very comical, confusing game. But the rule three is what we're going to start with today. Mm. So rule three of Brockian Ultra Cricket. Put your team and the opposing team in a large field and build a wall around them. The reason for this is that though the game is a major spectator sport, the frustration experienced by the audience at not actually being able to see what's going on leads them to imagine that it's a lot more exciting than it actually is. A crowd that has just watched a rather humdrum game experiences far less life affirmation than a crowd that believes it has just missed the most dramatic event in sports history. Rule three of Brockian Ultra Cricket. So it was funny, you brought up Hitchhiker's Guide, and then last night I think you texted me Brockian Ultra Cricket, and I read this rule and I thought, that feels like ultimate is sometimes.
Well, not just is sometimes. It's almost fundamental to the identity of ultimate. In order to have this game that the players are sort of designing the rules for, have come up with, and you're doing tournaments, you need to find, first of all, a large field so that you can minimize your travel expenses, get the most bang for your buck on a weekend, make it like a destination for you and your friends and all of that to go do this thing. But the other thing is that once you put it in the middle of nowhere, you're essentially building a wall around it, whether you are physically building a wall or not physically building a wall, metaphorically building a wall.
Let's use metaphorically building a wall.
So there's this history within Ultimate of Ultimate tournaments being this place where anything goes. Like you have some teams that are very intoxicated while they're playing. You have some teams that are playing in costume. You have other teams that are playing without clothes. So there's all this sort of thing that's part of Ultimate's history and part of Ultimate's lore and all of this community involvement that rely on you being in the middle of nowhere. Because when you go to parks and you play without clothes on, they call the authorities.
You get in trouble. I mean, there are these kind of layers of Ultimate. Like, you know, on one level, a tournament is about sort of the social thing, mm-hmm. you know, and on another level, and depending on the tournament, it's about the competition, it's about the social element, it's about both. You know, we all know that, you know, Fool's Fest is just a place to go get weird for a weekend.
Quite weird.
quite weird. And that's coming up, by the way. I don't know who's going to Fool's Fest out there, but have fun. You're going?
Calvin Ball. The return of Calvin Ball.
The return of Calvin Ball.
We were Calvin Ball last year. We'll be Calvin Ball again this year, because apparently the thing is this year that your team is supposed to have a bunch of rules to like impose upon the game that you're playing, and we were already doing that last year with Calvin Ball, which was like a part of the throwback to the 80s that they did last year, and our team just loved Calvin and Hobbes, so it was obvious for us.
It's fantastic. I thought, given your current hairstyling, that you might be joining Luke Ryan's team, which is Weekend at Bernie Sanders.
Oh no.
Basically, one person on the team has to do the Bernie dance as a mark point or something along those lines.
But then the issue is, if I'm doing Bernie Sanders hair, I have to get it to not lay down, so effectively it would need to be styled in some fashion.
Yeah, and I'll get you some hair stuff.
Yeah.
But anyway, your point is good. We'll get it back to it. The origins of Ultimate say, you know, we're this alternative sport mm-hmm. and this alternative culture, and as a result, we create separation of ourselves from the general public in order to better enjoy this. However, that's changed over the years to now where, you know, obviously what we're doing is very spectator-based, but even on the club level, they're looking for more eyeballs on it and more people to watch it. And yet, some of those same barriers still exist just as a result of the way that we're formatted.
Well, and there's a couple ways to look at that also. There was a handful of years ago, there were a couple photos that came out from Fool's Fest specifically that people were like, I actually don't want that photo of me on the internet.
Yeah.
So you're starting to get coverage and like media around Frisbee generally. And once you start doing that, once you're showing everybody what you're doing, it's, to use a term that has been used a lot recently in terms of discussion and discourse at universities and colleges, it's a safe space. So the idea of an Ultimate tournament was this safe space to, you know, let your freak flag fly, so to speak, and just to do whatever you want. But once we start looking at it from this, making it more visible, we don't necessarily want all of that to be the most visible part of Ultimate. But then we're making decisions about what the culture is and what the culture isn't. So are we all of these things? Some of them?
Well, I think there's just a lot of opportunity to be different things. You know, I was talking to some people from, you know, that do some work with WFDF, the World Flying Disc Federation. And, you know, they're very completely no referees, like all self-officiated is their kind of thing that they want to do. And we came to the thing that, you know, it's okay. Like, it's okay that people do different things. I could actually see Ultimate tournaments like Fools doing what, there's a cocktail bar I like to go to in Philly called Hop Sing. And you're not allowed to take pictures or video in the restaurant. If they catch you doing it, they ban you and you're never allowed back. And it would be interesting to say for an Ultimate tournament like Fools, where it's just about like being crazy and being fun, to be like, look, don't take pictures of this event. Don't broadcast this event. This is a space where people can let it go and then go back to their job as a lawyer and not get themselves
button
in a lot of
all
trouble.
The way back up.
All the way back up to the top. So I'm just saying that there's probably different realms of doing it. However, if you are looking for viewers, and if, as with Brocky and Ultra Cricket, you are a popular spectator sport, you know, obviously this being tongue-in-cheek, you want people to be able to see the game. And it's difficult because there are walls around it, metaphoric walls around it, particularly given the tournament format. And you notice that recently, and that's why we just came up.
And this is one of the things that comes up a lot when we talk about ultimate coverage of tournaments. So if you look at UltiWorld, for example, they get criticized a lot for not covering enough women's games, or not covering enough mixed games, or, you know, why didn't you cover my favorite team during this round or whatever. And my personal example of that, which I have mentioned to just about everybody, was last year.
I've heard it a lot.
DC Scandal was playing against Molly Brown in the quarters of women's. Mm-hmm. So Scandal had won the previous two national championships, had lost a handful of players to Molly Brown, and was going back for their next run at a title. And last year there were approximately five women's teams, maybe six, maybe seven, depending on the weekend, who are at the very top level. And there are a handful of other teams that can reach that top level. But in the quarters matchup, there was one matchup that was obvious. It's your returning champion, your reigning two-time national champion, playing against a team that has some of the best players from those two national championship teams on it. So from like a media standpoint, this is something that you would build up as much as you could and display as much as you could. The problem is it's also happening at the same time as three other women's quarters, four men's quarters, and four mixed quarters. So you have 12 games going on at the same time. This is the highest level. We're out of pre-quarters, so we've cut the field in half. How can you broadcast all of those games at the same time? And what decisions are you going to have to make in that scenario? So the tournament format doesn't lend itself to actually being able to cover individual teams or even necessarily individual divisions. Because once you get to semis, you still have teams playing in the same division opposite each other. So you couldn't even watch, like if you wanted to watch both women's semis or both mixed semis, you wouldn't be able to. They're happening at the same time on separate fields.
Right.
So it's a fundamental problem.
Even if you were there, you
right,
wouldn't be able
and
to see both.
You can technically see both of them at the
you
last
field. You can get up
side.
High enough,
yeah.
Get yourself a ladder.
Because you tried to, and you can sort of see when people get excited and check in on. But
yeah.
The issue remains that we're criticizing the media in part for this, but it's a fundamental problem of the tournament format. Without the format being adjusted specifically for media access or viewership or live viewership. So there's a problem there.
Mm.
And if we want to make it visible, we want to make the highest level visible.
Yeah, because it's not like there wasn't decent coverage at Nationals last year. I felt like there was. How many different games from that 12 were actually covered? Do you know? Was it three or four?
I want to say four, but I feel like that's on the high end because ESPN wouldn't do two at once, I didn't think.
No, not on that.
So when it comes down to it, it just was insufficient. Like, when you look at the numbers of these games, like in quarters of the 12 games that happened at once, seven of those 12 were decided by 3 points or less.
Mm.
And in semis, three of the six were decided by that same margin. And it's just, and even if you just look at quarters for the men's, three of the four games went to double game point. Three of four games in quarters went to double game point. Those are all games that you want to watch, either as a live viewer or as someone who's looking back to video evidence.
Well, that's the other thing, is there's not any evidence of those games
right
now, unless there's somebody from one of the teams doing some tape, which would be great
to see. The second part of that is, what's the official score sheet? So how do I go back and look at the game through like text analysis or whatever, the way you would look at a basketball game or a baseball game or a football game? There are still records of those games.
Or an MLU game now with our new thing we added to the box score.
I was just kind of setting you up for that.
It's exciting. If you guys haven't seen that, the new box score thing, you can go point by point through a game score.
Yeah, and you can see the number of breaks and holds and all of that. I've appreciated the work you guys have been doing for that because it can, a lot of times in the past, I would try to find a specific MLU game and I would have to like go through bits of the video. But now
right,
I can look at the stats and just say, oh, this is approximately the game I'm looking for. It shares similar characteristics to the game I'm looking for. It's a little bit easier to go.
And then you can find, like,
things.
Oh, I need that goal where this guy scored. And you can mouse over his name, see all the goals he scored, and then sift through and find it, which is cool. But the point of it is, though, is that I don't want it to seem, in at least from my perspective, like we are knocking the media, A, that covers a Nationals tournament. It's a huge tournament. There's only so much budget for cameras and for coverage. And it's not even knocking the tournament organizers like USAU. I mean, you have a tough task, and they have accommodated coverage a little bit better.
Oh, yeah.
With separating the championship out a little further, like giving it some space to breathe. But I think what's interesting that you brought up is there's probably more that could be done there.
Yeah, what I mean to highlight is just it is a really difficult problem to solve. And I'm not sure if we're looking for media visibility, I'm not sure we're trying to solve it through the correct lens. Mm. You wouldn't schedule all those games at the same time if you wanted to make those games visible. I know that this is not the reason it's done that way, but to have all of the quarters at the same time, it almost feels like you're trying to hide those games. They're impossible to watch whether you're in person, whether you're watching at home, or whether you're trying to cover it as like a reporter. It's impossible.
You have to actually be there at this point.
And you have to have even multiple people at every field site, like taking notes and doing all of this. Yeah. So like the manpower that's required to do it, or woman power, or any sort of power whatsoever, people power.
The power.
Right. So the power to do that is, it just takes a lot.
Yeah.
And I think we need to look at it critically as opposed to saying that tournament formats, the way that we've been doing them, lends itself to coverage.
Yeah, and I think that, I think you're absolutely right. If you want to cover it, you need to make some changes. But at the same time, there's going to be a limit to mm-hmm. what you can do.
Certainly.
If budgets go up and you can cover 12 games at once, well, that's something completely different. But even then, that's hard to consume as a viewer
right.
and as somebody watching it, which I know from when the Premiership has all their games on at once and I'm on NBC Sports like, no, I can't see them all. I don't have enough computers.
And that's the same. It's the same thing with March Madness, with NCAAs, yeah. which are coming up here. And it's the same thing with Champions League or even the World Cup. But you can actually view all of them individually if you want to already, because the infrastructure's in place. So you're making tough choices. Here the choice is already made for you.
Right.
And it's a tough choice on the other end. So it's not your tough choice.
The viewer doesn't have the agency.
Exactly.
And again, you also don't have the ability to go back and revisit it. So you're telling me then that Scandal Molly Brown game, that you aren't feeling a greater sense of life affirmation by having missed that game.
But I'm not sure.
And being able to imagine,
because
it's the greatest game that was ever played in Ultimate.
It was a 1-point victory. So
it's definitely not a humdrum game.
I imagine it was a great game. Yeah. I imagine it was phenomenal. And I've talked to people who played in that game, and they said it was a good game. But they can't relay the experience of watching it to me, so I am making it up in my head. And I have an idea of what happened in the late points of the game, but I don't get to see it. I don't get to see how these things happen and make my own judgment. I have to infer from what other people are telling me. And it's frustrating because still, to this day, the only team that I'm legitimately a fan of in any sports is DC Scandal. That's the only one.
That's it.
That's it. I am not a fan of other teams. I love sports.
You are
the
perfect person for your job us.
So this is the constant Zach Lowe thing, as he gets referred to as the Spock of basketball, because he doesn't care about the teams. And that's very much my experience with it. The Eagles were the last team I cared about, and they broke my heart when they lost to the Tampa Bay Bucks.
Yeah.
Rondae Barber ran back a pick, closed down the old Vet, and I was like, I felt awful for like a day. I was like, why am I feeling awful? This isn't what I want out of sports. This is terrible. And like, just sort of divested from there. I mean, I still love individual players, and yeah, I'd rather see the team that I see more often win more because it's more fun, but...
Not the full throwing stuff at your TV kind of fandom
that, all went away.
That I have with Everton.
No, I don't have that at all.
All right, yeah, that's good
to
know.
I'm happy without it.
I didn't have it for many years, and I intentionally reintroduced it into my life, and I don't know why I did that.
It's painful. I have a friend who's an Arsenal fan.
It ruins my Saturdays. Oh, no, not an Arsenal fan.
Jonathan Tamari, who you may remember from way back when. And he declined to watch the most recent UEFA Champions League.
Good choice.
Arsenal game. With me, I'm a huge fan of the Champions League. He's just like, it's going to be too painful. I know it. Yep. I know it beforehand.
You know Messi's going to score on you twice before you even get into the game. Brutal. All right. Well, I think this is going to be interesting. I think it's something we're going to revisit, because we're going to talk more in coming weeks about the MLU coverage this year and what we intend to do, and how that might actually have some applications in the club game, which could be interesting. Yeah. So we'll get into that stuff, but we'd love to hear from everybody else. Like, hit Dusty up at yeah, we didn't write it down again.
That's what I was trying to do just before we came in. At Dust Wheat R, DustWeetR.
Or you can get me at Nick Darling or at Cleats Cufflinks, and I'll make sure Dusty hears that. But I'd love to hear you guys' thoughts on how coverage choices are made, how that the opportunity to cover could be improved. We really respect the job, I think, that Charlie from Multiworld is doing.
Yeah, it was not
Elliot
a criticism. It's
and
just,
his team at Skyd are doing, that the ESPN crew is doing. There's a lot of good coverage out there. It's just, it's a difficult thing to do, and you know, either you bend the tournament to accommodate the coverage, or you somehow expand the coverage. How you get that done?
And it's a conversation, and all the people who are involved in that should be open to changing it and hearing the ideas and like bouncing it around a little bit more than I feel it has.
Absolutely, and there is some talk, and I know it's kind of behind the scenes, but there is some talk actually about a conference this fall of all of these people who cover Ultimate. So us, the AUDL, the USAU people, Sky, UltiWorld, and I think it's a great idea.
Yeah.
Like how we cover the game, how we do stats, how we do all that technical stuff.
Establishing best practices.
Needs to be talked about more, and I'm excited for it. So hopefully we can get that thing off the ground. The other thing that this quote reminded me of, though, right? We get the big walls around the field in right. Rocky and Ultra Cricket, which is important because it's a very dangerous game. Apparently, for those who don't know, the object of the game is you throw a bunch of sports equipment in there, and you basically try to hit other players with it. And then you run away as fast as you can and apologize.
Right.
And you're given points for your apology being concise and loud enough to be heard, preferably through a megaphone.
Correct.
Yeah. So it's a tough game, and so the walls are useful, protecting the spectators from actually seeing the game and protecting the players from the spectators, which brings us to our other point that we were talking about the other day. Wouldn't be cleats and cufflinks with you if we didn't talk basketball. I see people dive off the basketball court to get a ball and land in the stands.
Yep.
And I think back to the times that I've seen that in Ultimate. We were just talking earlier about Joel Wooten's play in the 2004 semis at Nationals. You can lay this out a little bit.
I can't remember exactly which one of our overzealous throwers decided that they saw Joel streaking deep and it was time to throw a huck all the way down.
It's almost always a good decision.
All the way down the sideline, like 70 yards down the sideline from your own corner down to the other end zone. And Joel knew that this was not coming back in bounds. But
he started out of bounds.
Yeah, and never got close to coming back in. In fact, landed behind a row of spectators, which is part of the problem because Joel's 6'5 and very, very fast.
Very fast.
And launches himself horizontally even more effectively than vertically.
Much more effectively. I always joked about this with him, and he probably wouldn't like to hear it, but he was the shortest tall man I ever played with.
Yeah.
Very good layout. So.
And so the issue was that he has the imperative to attempt to lay out and touch this disc before it hits the ground because he's then an inbounds player, which will then add 60 to 65 yards of starting position for your offense or for your defensive
team
once the other team picks up the disc. So he launches himself from inbounds, flies over a spectator on the sideline next to a cooler, gets his hands kind of near where the disc was, and I don't think he got it before it hit the ground. He may have. I can't remember.
When
I've gone back to
not.
Watch the video, I haven't seen the follow-up play for that, so like the video cuts out right then?
Oh, we had that little highlight reel, yeah.
Right.
You can't tell because he's at that point behind the audience.
And this is something that happens in not just in like recreational play or in your summer league or whatever. This happens at regionals. This happens at sectionals. It may still happen at nationals, but it happens far less frequently because the USAU has established a buffer zone where you can have officials, and then you can have players and coaches, and then you have spectators. The question becomes, why don't players take it upon themselves to do this all of the time? When I go to my Winter League games now, I see bikes within 2 feet of the sideline. I see chairs that are sitting on the field. What is it that makes you think that a bike or a chair is something that you might want to lay out into or run into, or even just try to pivot out of bounds with your pivot foot in bounds and throw through or around? It's something that we all have the power to change, but we constantly choose not to do it. If you're playing a Frisbee game, I'm betting you're competent enough to walk 20 yards to your bike. It's not that far.
Yeah, you're probably not going to get worn out during that. Yeah, I think about this all the time. When I was just at a game, I was out at a tournament in New Jersey this weekend. It was college.
Yeah.
And there are so many times when the guy walks the disc up to the corner of the end zone and it's like clear line and everybody has to move back.
You're all Frisbee players.
And there was literally, and again, it's tight. The fields are kind of close together, but even just a lot of the time, in fact, most of the game, there was a sideline full of people on the field.
Yes.
Not just next to the sideline, but actually on the field.
And to be fair, we all know that once the disc goes past you and you want to lean out a little bit, and you can walk through end zones.
But it's the waterfall effect of leaning out.
Yeah, but if you're aware enough and cognizant of where you are, you can be on the field without restricting play in any way. But that's not what's happening. What's right. happening is there's an artificial sideline. And whether you're consciously aware of it as a thrower or not, your throws are restricted just because there are objects there. You don't have to necessarily be aware of a light pole to not throw at the light pole. Like, you don't have to say, I'm not going to throw through that crowd of people to not throw through that crowd of people. But your choices are being restricted as a player Absolutely. As a result of that.
So it's got two, it's got three real effects from what I see at this kind of issue. One is safety. I remember
that's being, the biggest one.
I remember down at High Tide, Low Tide in Savannah when I was in college. And I landed in a garbage can. I was sprinting out of bounds. I jumped the catch of this guy. I can distinctly remember looking down at me like, I'm going to hit this garbage can. And I have choices. And there's that moment when time kind of slows down. You're like, I could land in right. this garbage can.
Right, right.
Or I could potentially land partially in this garbage can, which would be much more painful. But I'm not going to miss this garbage can.
I got to tell you, the notion that you're landing in a garbage can, it sounds totally made up.
It was awful. It was awful. Fell over.
It's...
So the problems are threefold, right? So it's the safety thing, which I think is the biggest thing. And I think, 100%. You know, we should all be responsible for that when we're playing recreationally or in, you know, in our club games where there's not these kind of restrictions enforced.
Yeah.
They still are important. Two, we have a problem with spectators. When there's people gathered so close around the field, it's very hard to see. And you can't really enjoy the game.
And they're disengaged physically from the idea of moving. The whole thing is that they are sitting and watching. If you're a player, you're at least sitting down and then getting up and going back.
Yeah, down. Yeah.
So you have a different mindset as a spectator. You got to get them even further back.
You got to move them further back. And it's also tough for coverage, too, for getting cameras out there and stuff like that. If the sidelines are crowded, it's hard to get views. It's a lot of the reasons that we've created pretty strict rules about where players can stand on our fields is to accommodate coverage. And then I would say that the third thing is that it's impeding play, because in reality, ultimate doesn't end at the sidelines.
No,
it extends X number of feet beyond the sidelines. They're still very playable. If you have a 6'5" guy who's standing on the sideline, his backhand reach is going to be, you know, pretty extended.
Significant.
Pretty extended. I don't know how long because I'm not that tall, but
yeah,
it seems like a lot.
And it restricts throws, all of that. It's just, it's one of those things that you can take upon yourself to take charge of. On a sideline, you can be the guy who annoyingly moves everybody's stuff back over and over and over again. And maybe, just maybe, it'll catch on. It's like the same person who cleans up the garbage after everybody. Like, there's always one of those people. I've been that person often enough that I know how it feels. You're just hoping that by doing it once, twice, 10 times, 100 times, you'll make somebody else do that same thing.
In a physics sense, the bag closest to the sideline is the densest object in the universe. It pulls all other bags closer.
Yes, everybody goes and puts their stuff down right next to it. Just stand back.
Don't be that bag.
Yeah. Don't be that spectator who needs to lean over.
I mean, I think it's obvious that it needs addressing. I think USAU's addressed it in their higher-level tournament format.
It's the follow-up from the players that's more necessary.
It's so important.
It's not top-down. It's bottom-up.
Don't have officials in a lot of places. So it's up to players to self-officiate not just what's happening on the field, but what's happening around the field.
Yeah.
So let's make sure that, you know, and this is our call-out, our public service announcement. The more you know. move your crap off the sideline, and let's play a little bit of safer game.
Let's play some of the frizz.
So we're running low on time. I wanted to touch on one more thing that we're gonna. This is our weekly thing. You're wearing an Ultimate shirt today. Can you tell us what we have on today?
A John Doe jersey today.
John Doe jersey.
Says John Doe here. We've got a couple anonymous fellas here, also the John Doe representation. I'm wearing this because John Doe is the team that I coach.
Yep.
I know I erroneously said last time I was on that my last link to the club division is Masters playing with horse. I'm still coaching club.
Still coaching club.
Yes, it's a little bit of a different link. I didn't mean to disrespect John Doe.
Did you get called out?
No, I did not.
Okay,
actually.
That's
I mean,
good.
Not that I'm aware of.
Yeah, probably.
They may have
behind
been
your
mumbling.
Back. Yeah.
But John Doe is an open team in DC, and we have a handful of players who have already been signed to the current this year, which I'm very excited about.
How many are we at?
We're at four right now, and I'm hoping there will be a couple more down the pipe yet. I'm trying to stay out of Will Smolinski's hair on all of that. There's a little bit of conflict of interest in all of that.
The open tryout for DC, there were 105 people.
That's what Dave was just saying to me, yeah.
So, you know, how many were John Doe? A dozen more?
I'm not sure because I lose track of when they were trying out for the Breeze or the Current.
Mm.
So it was around the low... 15 would have been the max, and I think that's really overestimating. But one of the reasons I'm excited is just that they get another chance to be coached by somebody else, experience Ultimate from a different perspective. And then as for me as a coach, I'm going to have video on all of these players. Every single one of my club players who plays in MLU or AUDL, I can go back and watch them play, and I can pull out clips of what they were doing. I can learn more about what they do in different contexts than I would put them in a game. So it's this resource where without those walls, so to speak, without that barrier to watching what happens at a Frisbee tournament, I get to watch these guys play and build my knowledge about them as players and hopefully help them develop more. And this is one of the things that I think both MLU and AUDL have done a great job of, is just starting to develop more and more players. So it's not just your club team. You're getting up-and-coming players. You're getting players from the mixed division who are playing single-gendered pro-style Ultimate. And just seeing players interact in different contexts, seeing them interact with different players without necessarily the culture of their teams behind it. It's just this scenario where the growth of the game and the growth of these individual players gets accelerated. And I'm so excited to have them not just on the team, but being coached by Will. I love Will as a coach.
Fantastic.
And hopefully Kevin will still be dispensing knowledge as a player.
Yeah, like you can stop Kevin from dispensing knowledge. Kevin is, he does not have a filter on knowledge dispensation.
No, but that's good.
No, it's good.
I want everybody to dispense knowledge all the time.
No, I think that's actually a really interesting point, is what kind of, you know, in both directions, but particularly in this sense, what, you know, are club coaches using this MLU, this pro experience, AUDL MLU experience, as a resource for understanding their players? They certainly will be, I think, but yeah. Are they now?
I think it behooves them to do so, but it's also just a matter of some clubs are specifically using and interacting with AUDL or MLU teams as either a feeder or like a test ground, or as a place where we all get to work on some new things, or even as a place where they play a little bit different style or things like that. And I feel like the looser association actually brings up the talent level, and it actually brings communities together, like within the same city, where you get mixed players playing with open players and all of that.
Absolutely. And I think,
cross-pollination.
Importantly, we're running out of time on this issue, but this is what we're going to talk about next time on Cleats and Cufflinks. I want to talk about the relationship between the MLU and club teams specifically, but also more generally the relationship between different club teams, club and college teams, mm-hmm. the way that these teams work to develop players, and where that leads in the future. So if you have any comments or questions on that, get me at Nick Darling or at Cleats Cufflinks. You can also get
at Dustweet Rose, DustweetR.
And right before we sign off, one last thing I want to point out is we have a terrifying Turtles jersey behind us today. This is the Fredonia Ultimate Team, where my brother actually plays. They sent us this shirt. So what we're going to do is, anytime you send us anything, be it a hat, a shirt from your team, we will incorporate it into the set, whether by wearing it, as Dusty is doing today, or putting it behind us or on the table here next to the Billy Maroon McCuddle trophy from 2009. We'll incorporate that in. So you can send that along, email us for an address, and we'll hook you up. But thanks again, Dusty.
Happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
We'll see you maybe next week.
Hopefully.
Let's do it. All right. That's all for Cleats and Cufflinks.